Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
It is Cinco de Mayo, motherfuckers. Get your tacos and margaritas ready, because whether you're Hispanic, you like Hispanics, or you want to feel a little Hispanic, it is a day to eat quesadillas. So enjoy your get it cooking on this fine Hispanic holiday, Mexican holiday. Got a lot to talk about, as always, because I can't shut the fuck up. But we're going to talk about Jordan Addison and this insanity that's going on every day. New developments every day makes you wonder what the fuck is going on in the world right now. And then also going to talk a little bit about Ohio State, a little bit about their receiver room. Chris is going to ask me some asinine question about the 2023 NFL draft, and I will probably dunk on him and everyone else in sports media.
It's not on me.
And then we're going to talk. Chris was really intrigued by my Urban Meyer story yesterday, so he wants me to expand on it a little bit, I guess. But going to talk about all that. If you haven't yet, I'm going to re-encourage you. I've already had a handful of people sign up for a trial and ask for a free one-on-one assessment. So if you go to zone6.com, click development and sign up. It's 7-day free trial. It's not going to charge your card for 7 days, and you can always cancel. But in doing so, once you do so, if you shoot me an email, I will give you a one-on-one consultation. And it could be, if you're a coach, we can talk about coaching philosophy, drills, whatever you want. If you're a player, just shoot me a link to your film or some drill work that you've done, and I will evaluate it, and we can talk about a plan to improve you. Just a way to get better, essentially. Mm-hmm. So go check it out, zone6.com. Like I told you, it's a 7-day free trial, so it's not for nothing. It's no cost to you. And the content dump yesterday actually is going to be dropping here in about an hour. So you haven't missed anything. So start your 7-day free trial and go check it out. Anyways. Shots and margs. I'm with it. What do you got, Chris? Let's go.
Well, today I'm in a new place. I got a little promotion at work. We got an office, and we didn't even need to get a haircut for a job interview. It was just thrown. So I
want to throw that out there, though. We're almost to 6,000 subscribers. Mm-hmm. When we get to 10,000 subscribers, it's 4,000 away. It might be a while, might not. I know Menace Army. I know how powerful you guys are. When we get to 10,000 subscribers, we will get the Chris haircut video shot and done. And it'll be whoever I want it to be that cuts his hair. So get us to 10K. If you haven't subscribed yet, subscribe now, just because we want to see Chris uncomfortable and getting a haircut. And he has no say in who cuts it or how they cut it. It's going to be a beautiful thing.
Yep. I'll get a haircut. But Zach, I got a promotion. No haircut was required. So I do want to talk, though, receivers first. Actually, no, let's talk our guy, Jordan Addison. So Jordan Addison, I think, might end up being the worst player to ever get a huge, huge deal like this in terms of he's being treated like Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, you know, obviously the Blintikoff Award winner, came with a lot of hype, but you sat down and kind of watched his film. It was a lot of stat fluffing stuff. And all of a sudden, Zach, he's been able to turn that kind of stat fluffing into millions of dollars. He gets to enter the transfer portal, maybe late, maybe on the fringe. Now they're saying his name maybe just didn't appear in time for the deadline, but he should be good. Now he's out in California. He got a house in California and $3 million reportedly offered to him. Not sure if he accepted it, but instead of training with Caleb Williams, he's out there with Bryce Young because I guess Alabama wants him as well. Zach, what the hell's going on?
Well, it's wild. So what I did, what I guess, I didn't know that a school had 48 hours to enter you in the portal after you tell them you want to enter in the portal. But apparently that's what happened at Pitt. I don't really care anymore. I don't even care to talk about the stipulations behind the portal because it's all just fucking ridiculous. Weird. They're trying to have some kind of regulation on absolute wild, wild west. It's like saying that you can sell cocaine, but it has to be under half an ounce or something. It's like, what? Like, okay, so if he has 3/4 of an ounce of cocaine, then they're good? Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's just dumb as shit. So apparently he put in his name at the deadline, but the school didn't submit it until 48 hours later. But now that this other player just jumped in the portal today, like, it's a confusing fucking mess. But apparently no waiver is going to be needed for Jordan Addison. But the whole dynamic in California is interesting to me because, one, I'm sure Alabama wants him right there in the market for a receiver. They've taken like 50 already. They've already taken two, right? Why not take a third?
They tampered with both of them.
Well, yeah, of course they did. But Bama, I think everyone that needs a wideout would be in the mix, right? Ohio State being the one school, it's like, you know what? We can't really fit another one. Like we're going to lose one. We can't add one. We have three NFL players right now.
He's better than, we're not sure.
Yeah. He's not better than those three. And I think everyone knows I've been well documented as saying that he was would have been the fifth best receiver last year at Ohio State. Two of those kids left. So now he would be the fourth best. If my math is correct.
We're anticipating months. Growth. Right.
So he's out in Cali. I think Lincoln Riley has the inside track on this because he's willing to go above and beyond as Artie's been proven as seeing as he tampered and got the kid to jump in the portal. But it's one of those situations where it's like, all right, you got the kid in the portal. Don't lose him now. Mm-hmm. Like all that back channeling, all that just shady shit that Lincoln was doing. If he loses him to Bama or Texas or Tennessee or somewhere like that, watch out because he could get in trouble for it and not even benefit off of getting the kid. That being said, I think this is the most wildly overhyped and overrated transfer ever. I studied his film. When he won the Blitnikoff, I was floored that they tried to say he was better than Garrett Wilson or Chris Olave. I studied his film. The kid is above average. Mm-hmm. I mean, he literally benefited from Kenny Pickett and Kenny Pickett's ability to throw with accuracy. I mean, it was mostly go routes and some bubbles and late game antics. And you never saw him route people. You never saw that spectacular catch that Garrett Wilson's had in his career several times. You never saw Jameson Williams running away from people and just dominating an opponent. You never saw any of that. So I don't know how we're putting his market value at $3 million. He's not worth $1 million to me. I mean,
if he's worth $3 million, what would you have paid for Garrett Wilson?
Oh, my gosh. Five? I mean, I don't – we're talking about just absolute insanity, though. Because you do that, what is your – let's say you're USC. $3 million in a house for Jordan Addison. Caleb Williams is going to be – excuse me. I'd like to have a word. What the fuck? What's going on?
Right.
You just gave this average-ass kid that's going to rely on me to make him great, and you paid him $3 million in a house. Where's your boy's bread at?
Exactly.
Stack your paper up. What's up?
Straight up. And it's interesting, Zach, because what this reminds me of is the Jaguars paying Christian Kirk like $90 million. It totally ruined the wide receiver market. And I'm confused about the Jordan Addison thing because guys like Lincoln Riley, Nick Saban want him, and it speaks to their room and things like this and that, but He's just a bubble screen guy, and he's fast, but it's easy to be considered a weapon when you're the only knife in a room full of fists. Like are you a weapon in a room full of weapons? And I don't know if the kid is, and it's easy to stat inflate when like getting you the ball is the only thing that can help us. But if we have three or four guys that are decent, like that knife is not really a knife anymore.
Yeah, and it's really easy to look. I mean, he didn't even look that dominant. And when you're playing fucking Duke and Wake Forest and these secondaries that just aren't full of NFL players, it's all well and good. He better choose USC to go play Washington State and fucking Arizona. He better, because he chooses Alabama. Christ, he is going to have his hands full. He's going to find out what the NFL is really like when he faces NFL secondaries, NFL DBs that are going to be drafted in the first, second round. He's going to find out real quick. Shit, he'll find out in practice day one at Alabama. Like, whoa. This is different. And I think that's one of the biggest things about this is like, all right, kid was a really good player at Pitt. Wasn't a dominant player, but a really good player. What's that translate to Alabama?
Yeah.
Now, USC, different world. Pac-12, really down. I mean, it might be a gift, a blessing for him to go to USC. But if he goes to Bama, the other side of this is this, right? This is where kids need to be smart. Jameson Williams went to Alabama and made, what, $35 million by doing so.
Straight up.
Because he chose Alabama. Now, granted, he was the best player on offense outside of Bryce Young. He was the best receiver by far in the room. And I don't think that's the case with Jordan Addison if he goes to Bama. But that business decision netted him $35 million. Mm-hmm. So let's say the cost differential between USC and Alabama is $1 million. Let's say Bama offers $2 million, USC $3 million. Where is he going to benefit the most from in 12 months from right now when he gets drafted? because is USC going to be able to get him the same development and attention and featuring that Nick Saban just proved that they can do to get him in that same draft slot? If he, if they cannot, if he believes USC cannot do that, he's losing a ton of money by picking USC over Alabama for only $1 million difference, right? And that's the issue. These kids need to remember there is an investment aspect of this. What's the difference between $2 million and $3 million to the kid that doesn't have shit? Nothing. Yeah. He don't fucking know the difference. He's going to see his bank account with seven figures in it and shit himself and go to the club and fucking throw ones everywhere. Like, he won't know what to do with himself. And it's a negligible difference when you look at where is this headed from here, right? What's next?
Months. It's for 12 months. That's it. Because he's going to the NFL.
Yeah.
No, he's going to declare. Now, it's interesting, Jack, because something that you brought up was the Nick Saban element and, like, developed as a transfer, which is Nick Saban now has the best recruiting pitch to all these transfer receivers. Like, if you are go somewhere and are good and want more, we can bring you here and make you a household name, an NFL name immediately. And even with a torn ACL, Jameson Williams getting drafted as high as he did, is that's a really good recruiting pitch. Now, I know Ohio State fans are going to be like, well, we developed them, we did this, we did that. No. Nick Saban's on the phone with these recruits as well, but not high schoolers.
Yeah. That's complete horseshit to say you developed them, because you didn't. You never saw any of that. Mm-hmm. You never saw.
I don't think it's horseshit. I think it's lame, though. But I hear you.
No, it's completely fabricated, is what it is. You can't say you developed Jameson Williams. Where on tape did you see anything like what he did at Bama at Ohio State? I mean, he was on the field for an entire season, started, played almost every snap. Where did you ever see him do any of that stuff that he did at Alabama at Ohio State? You didn't. You saw him on a couple go balls. I mean, burn people and score touchdowns, but you never saw slants. You never saw run after the catch. You never saw him routing the shit out of people. You never saw any of that. And I'm not saying he didn't get taught at Ohio State. I'm not saying he didn't get developed at Ohio State. But to take credit for the development of Jameson Williams when he didn't do shit like that at Ohio State is asinine.
Well, heard. Where would you go if you're Jordan Addison? USC or Alabama?
USC.
Okay. That easy.
USC, because you got the quarterback. You Lincoln Riley, I mean, he's I'm not saying he's developed receivers, but he's had CeeDee Lambs of the world, right? He's had guys that he knows how to get the ball. And some of the stuff he did with CeeDee Lamb at Oklahoma, I loved. Mm-hmm. I mean, getting him involved on little swing screen RPO stuff, route combinations. I really think Lincoln can feature a receiver, and USC doesn't have the skill level that Alabama has, especially adding the two transfers in. I mean, Jordan Addison's going to walk into, you know, a lion's den at Alabama. He's walking into like lion cubs at USC. So I think it's a better situation at USC. Lincoln has proven that he can feature a receiver a la CeeDee Lamb, and there's been several others. So I really think that's the spot for him. I think it was a good decision to leave Pitt. I don't think he has the quarterback play, but I think USC is the answer. I really do. Unless he wants to explore a Texas or a Tennessee or somewhere like that. I know Tennessee just got Brew McCoy, but the jury's still out on him, but they seem to be in the market for spending a ton of money on transfers and recruits. So
they're just buying whoever, man.
I mean, literally you hit the portal. You're like, well, Tennessee, Texas A&M, like, let me put my top five together. It's the people that I know are just spending bank on players.
Yeah. The Turnstile kid from Ohio State. They said, come here. We got a bag for you. They just got bags for everybody. I think that for him, especially a kind of a Hollywood Brown mold, is what I think Lincoln Riley could pitch to him, because obviously was at Oklahoma and kind of that a little bit slider receiver, but really electric, getting the ball in space. I think USC is a place for him, not just like what he'll face in practice, but the Pac-12, it's just weaker. It just is. They just play less defense. Yeah. So,
well, and I think the reality is, I don't think Jordan Addison is a day one draft pick in the NFL. I don't, no matter where the fuck he goes. And so if I thought he was a first round talent, I would say go to Alabama, because you're going to get developed like a motherfucker going against those secondaries every day in practice, playing in the SEC against NFL DBs. And if you
sent me the video of Jamar Chase versus Stingley Jr., his
yeah, it was unbelievable.
Like, that's incredible. That's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's two legit first round DBs and receivers battling it out. It's a lot like, you know, I watched Jeff Okuda go against some of the receivers that Ohio State has had, right? You watched Marshawn Lattimore and Michael Thomas battle it out, Devin Smith and Denzel Ward. Like, watching those battles is so critical to development, because you're going against a Pro Bowler, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when Terry McLaurin went against Denzel Ward, you're like, well, these two are future Pro Bowlers. And we didn't know it at the time, but that's part of the reason they got there. Was
$100 million men.
Michael Thomas going against Marshawn Lattimore, Denzel Ward, and Gerrion Conley every day in practice. What the fuck do you think is going to happen? He's going to get so much better, and so are they. And it's just, it was a culture that got developed, and I think Bama has that culture. And then not only that, but when you go play in the games, I mean, if you, what Jameson Williams did in the SEC proved that he could do it against NFL defenses, because the SEC is basically full of NFL players. Just look at every draft count ever.
Straight up. And obviously, you know, Nick Saban vouched for him as well. Zach, if he goes back to back Blitnikoff, is he a first rounder?
No, has nothing to do with nothing. The Blitnikoff is fucking completely worthless when it comes to evaluation or actually rewarding who the best player was, much like the Heisman, much like every other award in the country. So no, he could win 25 fucking Blitnikoffs. I don't give a shit. Let me watch his film. He needs to get so much better, so much more dynamic, learn how to run routes, learn how to route people. He needs to actually make an impact outside of catching a perfectly thrown deep ball over his right shoulder. Mm-hmm. Like, he has so much that he needs to show before you can say he's a first rounder. I don't give a fuck if you give him the goddamn Medal of Honor. The kid is, that doesn't mean shit when it comes to, is he an NFL talent? It doesn't.
Heard. If you're building a receiver, Zach, what traits are you looking for? Like, if you could take these traits from one player, what do you think? Hands, speed, and frame, and then route running. For me, the easy one is hands. I would take Michael Thomas's hands. And for then sure. Speed, I would take Devin Smith, the deep speed. Mm-hmm. But I wanted it more about route running. Like, who's the best route runner you've seen? And if you could build a receiver, where would you start?
Jerry Jeudy. Jerry Jeudy was unbelievable at how he could accelerate, stop on a dime. He even at a young age in high school, and then I watched it at Bama, and we'll see it in the NFL now that he has a quarterback. But he has such a gamesmanship, such a swagger about how he runs routes, how he attacks DBs and sets up DBs. It's really, really fascinating to watch. I saw it in high school. I watched it at Bama. He's really, really, really good.
How hard is it to teach route running? Like, when you get in and you work on that kind of thing? Because that feels like something that some guys can't.
It's one of the harder things to do. I mean, teaching someone to run full speed and stop in 2.5-3 steps is really, really hard. I mean, you run 15 yards full speed and stop in 3 steps, that's fucking hard. Really, really hard.
What's your favorite route to watch work?
I don't really have a favorite route to watch work. I mean, I love slants. I really do. Michael Thomas was great at him. Jameson Williams was great at him at Bama. Just because they can be like a hot knife through butter, through a defense. If you hit it, the timing's right, ball placement's right, and you run the route right. I mean, if you can run through a catch, it's a touchdown. Mm-hmm. It really is. And a lot of times you see guys don't score touchdowns because the ball placement's a little off, or they don't run through a catch, they slow down. So a guy they beat catches up and tackles them, or it's zone coverage, and then they have to learn how to attack second level zone coverages to try to crease a defense. But I think slants can be the most lethal. Mm-hmm. Go routes are obviously really fun if you get down to the nuts and bolts of teaching it and how to get open on it. And with the right quarterback, go routes can be uncoverable, because if you're covered, they can back shoulder you. They can throw it over your outside shoulder, and you can play box out as a receiver. So go routes are good too. But I think comebacks and stops are my favorite because of the technical difficulty of doing it, right? The illusion of a go route, hitting full speed, and with your body efficiency, stopping in 3 steps and making a guy keep run. It's a beautiful thing to see.
I love watching comebacks, because like that the because you can see the exact point of separation, and that's why I really like watching comebacks.
You can see inefficiency if it's not run well and why a guy gets covered. I mean, it's a great route too.
We were at whatever bar you took me to after the Michigan State Ohio State game, and
Yogi's. Come on, man, shout it out. We went to Yogi's.
Yeah, shout out Yogi's. We're watching the Bama game. I can't remember who they were playing. But we were watching Bama and Jameson Williams, and literally as the ball is being thrown on a slant, you said that's a touchdown. Caught it, hot knife through butter. I mean, it was like 70 yards on a slant, and immediately you got a call from a former Ohio State player saying, "Yo, how did we let this kid go?" Yeah. Like he was just cooking everybody. And it is a really fun thing to watch. When guys house slants, it's like watching a triple in baseball. Like it's so fun to watch.
It's beautiful, which, by the way, my son's team that we had 2 triples last night. Just side note, you just brought that up. Big win, 20-6. Go 20-6.
But, damn.
Bro, we scored 14 runs in the third inning and 11 of them with 2 outs, just smashing the baseball. The other team was a good team, too, Upper Arlington. They were a good baseball team. The pitchers were throwing heat, but we were just smashing the ball. But not to get off on that side tangent, just a little shout out. My son was actually sick, so he wasn't even there. He's watching on Game Changer Live, and I'm there coaching. It was bummed hell he didn't get to play. But we got a big tournament this weekend. He'll be back. Don't worry.
Run after catch. Who's the best you've seen at that? And then I'll move on.
Run after catch what?
Run after catch. Like what receiver was the most dynamic in space? Like run after catch.
No, I have Percy a couple Harvin. Of. Percy. That's the easiest answer ever. Right. Percy was the best.
What about at Ohio State?
Best run after catch receiver at Ohio State. Probably Jalen Marshall.
I thought you were going to say Curtis Samuel.
Man, it could be Curtis Samuel too. That's two really good ones.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know where you're going to go with that. I was curious. I like Paris Campbell. He wasn't a shifty, but he was so fast.
I mean, I think I will go Paris because he runs like a running back, kind of like mm-hmm. Curtis did, but Paris was stronger, more powerful. Like you weren't tackling him with an arm tackle, and he had a gear, man. When he hit that gear, it was like Jameson Williams and like Cheetah, right? That deuces up. I'm out of here. So that's in my time at Ohio State who it is. I see someone mentioned Ted Ginn in the comments. For sure, he just wasn't really a receiver. He didn't run real routes. He ran like hitches and swings and bubbles and goes.
Ginn was a real receiver, a little bit bigger, he would be Jameson Williams. Like that's it. Jameson Williams is the redo of Ted Ginn just as a real receiver. I don't care what anybody says. And that's why it's so criminal that Ohio State let him leave. Because –
that it is.
Yeah, I mean, he legitimately was Ted Ginn. That's how electric Jameson Williams is. I do want to ask about, there's a lot of talk about the next head coach at Ohio State. I know you hate this discussion. I know you hate it, and you're mad at me for putting this in the notes. But if you were picking who the next head coach at Ohio State would be, say Ryan Day, God forbid, knock on wood, goes to the Bears or whatever, you got your two final candidates are Fickell and Brian Hartline, who do you pick?
That would never be the finalists, so I don't even know where to go. I guess
Fickell. That's the Twitter finalists. What do you mean?
No, that's fucking okay, idiots. It's idiots finalists right there.
Well, I'm the idiot.
I guess I'll go Luke, proven head coach. He's shown he can run a program and be the CEO of a program. So I guess I would go Luke. Brian may be the best head coach ever live, but we don't know anything about that. And he hasn't even run an offense yet. So until you run something and show that you can do it to an extent at Ohio State, I think that's it. But on the flip side of that, I have always said that give me an assistant coach that can run a room like a receiver room and recruit show that he's an elite recruiter. And that guy is going to be an elite head coach. So I think Hartline certainly fits that mold. But at Ohio State, I don't think you can just hire a receiver coach. That's nuts. It would never happen.
No finalist. Who do you want as your next head coach at Ohio State?
I mean, it's hard not to go Luke. I think that Ohio State boosters and fans and board of trustees and all those douchebags, not fans. Fans are great, but the other ones are douchebags. I think they'll have a hard time because he already failed once because they're so fucking dumb. They don't realize how that happened and what that was. So I would love to see Luke. I think Jeff Hafley's a good answer. Mike Vrabel would be a great answer if he would come back, which he might. I mean, you never know. But I don't know. I mean, I don't have anybody off the top of my head. Those are the ones with ties that make sense, right?
A lot of people are talking about Brian Hartline being a guy. I worry that's a pretty sizable jump. But thankfully, I expect Ryan Day to be here for a while longer. I mean, you've referenced the fact that he loves Ohio State.
Well, and you know who else it could be? It could be Urban F. Meyer.
Return of the real.
Return of the real.
That's a perfect segue. Yesterday, Zach, you said that that he was mad at you about tampering with a player, cussed you out, said you'll never work again, your career's done. Fast forward a little bit, he ends up at Ohio State. You get a call. Were you surprised? Like, walk me through this. When Urban Meyer gets the job at Ohio State, what was your next move, or were you just waiting?
Oh, I told people I would never work for him, and there was no thought in my mind that not only would he call me, but that I would accept it because of how he treated me in that situation. Because literally I was talking to the Florida coaches about a kid that was reaching out to me saying he wanted to transfer and telling, I alerted them to it. Like I let them know, hey, this kid wants to transfer. I wanted to let you know. Yeah. And then they're talking to me about tell him this, talk to him this, tell him this. Urban finds out about it and is on the phone with me like, hey, text Carl, tell him to come see me right now because Zach Azani can't find him and he won't answer his calls. So I text Carl Moore. I'm like, hey, just go see Urban. Whether you want to transfer or not, like go see him and talk to him. And then you could tell him you want to transfer or listen to what he has to say. So I did all that. I'm calling the kid, talking to the kid because Urban's telling me to, right? Then if it all works, it all before he says he's going to stay, Urban finds out that we sent in that form asking to talk to him because our compliance guy jumped the gun a little bit and immediately was like, why are you calling Carl? We're going to pull your phone records from Marshall. Why did you call him and did you text him? And he had a Jamie McCloskey, the compliance guy, sitting there on speakerphone with him. Like I'm some fucking like he's like got the feds there on wiretap.
That boy was like, snitching. What the fuck?
You could have just called me like a grown man. Like, why are we calling with the feds here? Mm-hmm. And he called me. And when he said that, why did you do that? I was like, because you texted me and said, let me read it. Zach, call Carl Moore right now for me. It's right. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Why did I call him? You just told me an hour ago to fucking call him. What are you talking about? This is how delusional the motherfucker is. Like, he lives in Urban Meyer world. Nothing else is real. And he just created a situation in his head where I was trying to steal a player from him. Meanwhile, an hour earlier, I'm speaking to him about the situation and doing what he told me to do as if I still work for this motherfucker. So then he had the audacity to do that, to say my career was over. He was going to be contacting the NCAA, all this shit on someone that I've known my entire life. And I worked for fucking nothing. No, $0 for 5 years. He's going to ruin my career. Some lowly coach at Marshall. And as I told him, I said, listen, man, if you want to ruin my career, the receiver coach at Marshall, because your receiver coach at Florida is fucking awful, have at it, man. Have at it. That's one way to fix a problem, I guess. And then I never talked to him again for 2 years or a year and a half.
It's
and
then crazy he got the job at
Ohio State. And I don't know how, I don't know if he talked to Steve Adazio. I don't know how he made a decision to talk to me, but he just called me one day and we started talking about mainly about the offense. Like he wanted to see how well I knew it. I'm like, bitch, I know this thing inside and out, every fucking detail. What quiz you want to shoot at me?
So Urban Meyer's name pops up on your phone after not speaking to him for however long. What was the gap between those two situations?
At least a year and a half, almost two years.
Urban Meyer, did you answer it immediately? Urban F. Meyer on the phone?
Yeah, of course. Like, the guy just got hired at Ohio State. I'm not fucking stupid.
So you knew it was go time. Were you ecstatic?
I figured it. I mean, I didn't know it was go time, but I figured that was what the call was about. He was contemplating it, thinking about bringing me there. I don't really know.
And you didn't expect a phone call after you got the job at Ohio State. I mean, you have ties to Ohio State. You were a good receiver. Yeah, coach. But
Chris, this man tried to. He said he was going to end my career a year and a half earlier, and never spoke to me again.
You guys are going to be co-defendants, if anything. If he sent you the text,
right? But he's too naive. He lives in a different world. Like those texts didn't exist. Only the ones that I sent Carl Moore existed.
Right. It's like you're going to ruin my career, dog. No, we're co-defendants. We were dealing coke together. So the phone call comes. It's Urban Meyer, and then how soon after that did he kind of let you know, hey, let's. I would like you to be a wide receivers coach at Ohio State.
Well, he told me that he was like, all right, I think we're going to do this. So let's figure out what we got to do and get it done. And I was already going. We played in the first bowl game of the year that year. We played on December 17th in the New Mexico Bowl. Mm-hmm. Yeah, New Mexico Bowl. And so I was coming home after the bowl game for the holiday. My grandmother was going to pass away soon, and she ended up passing away before I got home. So I was going to be there anyways for the holiday and for her arrangements and funeral and all that stuff. And so he basically said, pack everything up and come on, let's go. Then I got to Columbus, went through all that. You know, I've told the story. I went to the Woody Hayes the first day. Well, first I met him in the Blackwell in this big suite. And this is when, like, I had already done all my exit paperwork at Temple, like already had resigned from my job at Temple because I was getting a job at Ohio State. And then right when I land that night, I went to the Blackwell to meet with him, and he started challenging me about Carl Moore, why I was fucking with him and all this other stuff. And I'm sitting here like, oh Christ, like where's this conversation going? You just hired me and I just quit my job. And then the next day I go to the Woody Hayes Athletic Center and at 6 a.m. and I'm sitting in on Mike Vrabel's interview to remain as the D-line coach. It was very bizarre.
He talked to you about Carl Moore. He was tripping about that still, or was he?
He was like, why did you fuck with me on that kid at Florida? I don't even know if he remembered his name. and I explained to him, I said, coach, I didn't fuck with anyone. You were not the head coach. You were on some hiatus. I talked to Steve Adazio about it. He told me, fuck the kid. He could leave. And then you came back. You and I were talking, and I was helping you get the kid to stay. And then next thing you know, you have me on the phone with compliance talking about you're going to end my career. I wasn't fucking with anyone. You were fucking with me. And then he just dropped it. But I guess it was something, I guess he had to say it out loud or something. So then, you know, then at that point, I didn't think I was hired. Then I thought I was hired. And then my grandmother's arrangements come around, you know, the viewing or what a showing, whatever the fuck you call it. They have that. And we had two sessions. And in between, there was like a family time where we all ate lunch and hung out and kind of reminisced or whatever. And Urban was invited to that. Like being so close with my grandfather, he was invited to that. He was the only non-family member there. And when we were there, he looked at my grandfather and said, Coach Bruce, I just made my decision. I'm going to hire your grandson to be the receiver coach. And I'm sitting here like, you just made your decision. Motherfucker, I've been here for a week. I already quit my job. What do you mean you just made your decision? You better have made that decision 2 weeks ago when you offered it to me. So I think Zach, he was just trying to be dramatic.
That's for the 30 for 30. That's exactly what that was. That's for the 30 for 30. He was being dramatic.
And it fits the narrative, right? Like, see, Urban Meyer left a bad coach on staff. He was even at his grandmother's family time funeral. Okay.
All right, Zach, I want to move ahead a little bit. I want to talk just recruiting real quick. And then I want to hit the 2023 NFL stuff. Now, Ohio State has one receiver committed right now. They have a couple of receivers that feels like they're on the cusp. Noah Rogers, Carnell Tate, and Brandon Ennis. How quickly do you think these dominoes will start to fall? And how often did you use a room filling up as pressure to get more commitments?
It depends on the kid. I mean, if you're going after Noah Rogers, who's, you know, probably a good player, not a great player, I might pressure him a little bit. Like, listen, we got two spots left. Brandon Ennis has taken one. I got five guys for the other one, and whoever jumps in first, it's theirs. But Brandon Ennis, you ain't never pressuring that motherfucker. You are letting him ride it as far and as long as he wants to ride it. No homo. You are. And so it's situationally dependent. But you know, as long as they can pull off Brandon Ennis, it won't matter. I think they're gonna come to a point where they can get one or two great players in every class, and outside of that, it's gonna be developmental guys, and that's what you're gonna have to go with. It's gonna be hard for Ohio State with where their receiver room is now to go get three nationally elite prospects, because they're gonna be sitting there like, wait a minute, you got six elite prospects in the room right now, three developmental guys that could be elite, and you're bringing in three elite ones in our class? I'm never going to see the field. Like, what is that? Yeah. So unless it's that number one wide receiver in the country, number two wide receiver in the country, because they don't believe anyone's better than them. They could see Jackson Smith and Jigba like, no, I'm going to beat that sumbitch out. You're like, what? No, you're not. But okay, come try.
Yeah, come try. We think you can too. I do think it's interesting. Do you think, would you take four players every year? Do you think three is the good number to stay at? Or, I mean, I guess you just said one or two elite guys.
It just depends on your philosophy, right? Mm-hmm. You have anywhere from 10 to 12 slots for receiver in an offense, depending on, you know, where Ryan Day wants to put those chips, right? Because that's what a head coach does. He divvies out 85 scholarships and positionally at where he believes that number should float. And then you have to maintain that as a position coach. You kind of have your own mini roster, right? Like I had, because Urban was a receiver coach, I had 12 slots and I had to manage that constantly. And so in a perfect world, you take three every year, right? One transfers, one kid stays for a fifth year every now and then, and you remain right around 12. So three every year is the number. Now, with the advent of the portal and all that stuff, I could see why you would take four every year, because you know that some kids are going to transfer. There's going to be attrition. But at the same time, if your program philosophy is to utilize the portal, you might be bringing some in. So do you stick with three or possibly two and go get Jordan Addison? Right. Or go get a guy that might be able to, you know, give you some veteran experience right away. So I think Ohio State's model, certainly, as we've seen, is to recruit high school players. They're not portal bound for receivers unless a great one pops in, maybe. But I think Hardline wants to recruit them and develop them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he values kind of that aspect of it, the developmental process of it. So it is interesting. Here we got a super sticker. If Ryan Day does not win a natty in the next 2 years, he's gone. I don't think he's gone, But I do think there'll be a ton of pressure on him to win a Natty. I think next year's the year if they're going to win one, just because everything is lined up. But I think he's too good to be gone if he doesn't win.
The only way he's gone in 2 years is if he doesn't beat Michigan.
Right.
That's the only way.
Mm-hmm. That's you're right. That is the only way. 2023 mock draft. This is like the time where it spikes and then it goes away. Then it spikes again. They're calling it the Super Three: Zach Will Anderson, CJ Stroud, and Bryce Young. Excuse me. And kind of the fourth guy that keeps popping up is Paris Johnson Jr. to be the first of those non-Super Three, and then also Will Levis or whatever getting picked in there somewhere in the top five as well. Zach, when are we going to abolish the mock drafts that are, you know, 13 months early?
I mean, I've abolished them my whole life until today. You decided to fucking talk about it. So
Paris Johnson. No, it's more of a, it's an endorsement of your boy, Justin.
But this is why it's ridiculous. Paris Johnson is so talented and you've seen it on film, right? He has so much ability. He hasn't played tackle yet. So to even project him anywhere is like, wait a minute, we haven't seen him play tackle. What the fuck are we talking about? But he's so talented. He could be the number one overall pick. He really could. But he also, if he struggles a little bit with the position move, or, you know, he needs another year of development, he could be a third rounder. Like, it's the most asinine thing ever, because you literally are basing it on nothing, mm-hmm. on absolutely nothing. Paris Johnson literally could surpass everyone you just mentioned, and everyone may view him as the next Orlando Pace, like the absolute premier franchise left tackle. He is the number one overall clear-cut pick. He could do that, but he could also need another year. I mean, this is kids. These are mm-hmm. kids, and he hasn't played left tackle yet. So it's just, I mean, it's cool, I guess, for the kid and for fans to talk about, because it's like, wow, like, people think I'm talented and have that kind of potential. But the reality is, he's got to put in the work, he's got to get developed, and he's got to go do it on Saturdays. And if he does, then we can talk about it at the end of the year. Talking about it now is such a waste of fucking time and energy. We might as well talk about, like, aliens or some shit like that. Or let's talk politics.
We're not going to do that. If I were Paris Johnson, you know what I'd be doing, Zach? I'd be grabbing every one of these articles and sending it to every corporation. Look, you could get in on me early. I'm going to be a top whatever draft pick. Start it now because of the NIL stuff. Well, other than that, I do think it's silly. I think it's kind of funny. But like Nick said, it is a mock draft based on recruiting rankings.
Somebody sent me one with DJ Uiagalelei going in the first round.
Yeah, number seven overall. What? Yep.
And you know what? It's and I think Nick just said it in the chat. It's literally just based on recruiting rankings. At mm-hmm. this point, they say, okay, who are the biggest recruits that are returning to college football this year? Let's slot them in this draft. And these people don't watch film. And if they do, they don't know what the fuck they're watching. So it's all for entertainment. And here you are talking about it. So that's the point.
Well, I see him, and I saw your boy, AR-15 in the top 10 of some drafts. I'm like, okay.
You know what I mean? Just asinine. The kid can't throw yet. I mean, he has the potential to be a great player, but he can't throw the ball. I mean, what are we talking about? Yeah, okay, top 15.
That's fair. All right, Zach. Urban Meyer looks like he's coming back to Fox. People are mad. I think he does a good job talking about football. Why do people care so much?
It's amazing, right? They'll let Ray Lewis go on TV all day long. Motherfucker killed a guy. Urban Meyer stuck his finger in a 24-year-old, and now it's like he can't be on fucking TV. Like, what are we talking about? It's just nuts. But the hate is real, right? They mm-hmm. just have a disdain for Urban like no other. I've never seen it. I mean, honestly, they just can't stand him. And it's going to happen eventually. I saw Keyshawn Johnson had the audacity to say Urban's going to be the head coach at Texas in 2 years if Sark doesn't get it done. It's like, at some point, someone's going to hire the guy, and mm-hmm. it'll be, I mean, the Big Noon kickoff. Think about it. The Big Noon kickoff was so much better than game day or anything else on TV. And he left, they replaced him with Bob Stoops, and it was almost unwatchable. That's how bad it got. So now Bobby jumps to the USFL or XFL, I think, and they have a seat open. The guy that drove their ratings through the roof is right there. I mean, it's just,
he does a good job.
He does a great job. I mean, honestly, if we want to talk about it, fuck it, let's talk about it. If you want to talk about a star-studded pre-game show or whatever, a Saturday morning show, if you had Josh Pate, Urban Meyer, I think Brady Quinn does an excellent job, Reggie Bush does an excellent job, lose the other jokers. If you put those guys on a panel and did a game day show, it would be better than anything we've ever seen, ever. And if it was on, you know, cable TV and not on FCC regulated TV, I'd love to be on there, but I'm not going to stop saying fuck. So, and then they would never put me on there, but either way, I mean, it would be ridiculous.
It would. No, I like having him on. It's so crazy. Cause like, just like this idea of Twitter, like if you get a lap dance from a girl, you're never allowed to be in public eye again. You know,
like, what are we talking about?
If you yell like, at a kicker, not, you can never.
But it's a double standard, right? Mm-hmm. It depends on what you were, right? Yeah. If you were a player, it's okay. Right. You know, you grew up after that. If you're a coach, as you're a little older or something, it's like, I don't know. He was a coach. He did that as a grown, mature man. Does it matter when you did something?
The same people rocking the Tyreek Hill jerseys, the same people, screaming. Amazing, Kareem right? Hunt.
Yeah. It's all like the fucking Kareem Hunt fans in Cleveland. Boy, all those. Hey, shout out to the other side of Buckeye Nation that thinks I'm a shitbag with their Kareem Hunt jerseys on.
Yeah.
Fucking clowns.
It's like the same people retweeting Deshaun Watson in a Browns jersey. It's just
right.
all the shit. It's literally so insane. It's so insane.
It's society. Josh Payton, right?
using Zach Smith for clout. It's insane. I mean, and like the whole Sark thing, man. Like Sark went to, you know, he had some issues there, went to Bama, and now he's fine, and no one wants to say a word, but Urban Meyer getting a lap dance. Where he looked very sad after a loss, I must say.
Well, he looked like he was having a time of his life, but honestly, so if we're being realistic and not like some media frenzy for no fucking reason, I think it's great. I think it's great for Fox. Great. It'll give ESPN a run for their money again. Great for Urban to put himself back out there. Maybe if the media could find something better to do than just shit on him all the time, maybe do some actual work. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It'd be a hell of a deal, but I think it'd be awesome. I think it'd be great for him to get back out there. I think it'd be great for Fox because they need it. And I think it's great for the overall market to have him back in it because he delivers a different product.
It's great for the fans because I learned so much watching Urban Meyer and listening to you because you guys were on the ground level with it instead of just guys who came up like me, like Zach. I'm not qualified to do shit like that, but I came up the way most radio guys and TV guys come up. We go to the OAB, we go do this, we go do that. We run a board for this game, and then next thing you know, we're calling ourselves experts and draft analysts when we've never done any of that shit ever. So I like it. I think it's good for the fans. I'm a big fan. But Zach, I got nothing else unless you got anything else.
No, I don't, but I do. I just saw in the comments. I do want to shout out Trevor Bauer because that's complete horseshit. 2-year suspension from Major League Baseball on some allegations that were proven false. I hope he sues the fuck out of Major League Baseball and wins a fortune. They'll fucking call it Major League Bauer or something.
They gave him the death penalty, Zach.
It's absolutely nuts. 2 years. And I don't know the details of his case, but I mean, who are you to do that to Trevor Bauer when everything got dismissed in court? I mean, I don't know every single case, but the one major case got proven to be a complete sham and lie. And the woman is nuts and was like texting people about how she was going to set him up and all this shit. And now we're going to ban the guy for 2 years. It's criminal. It's absolutely criminal, but
the 2 years is crazy because his contract ends in 2 years.
Oh, so yeah. And then they'll blackball him and owners won't give him another contract. Yeah. Exactly. They're trying to get him out of the league because they don't like the fact that he's so outspoken.
And he's so real. Yeah.
Yeah. That shit's raw and real. So I'm a huge Trevor Bauer fan for what it's worth. And as the woke mob would say, oh, that's so on brand. Zach Smith likes Trevor Bauer.
Zach endorses Trevor Bauer.
Zach Smith endorses Trevor Bauer. Anyways, that's all I got, Chris. Menace out.